Welcome, 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 everybody. We're so happy to have you with us here today. I'm here with my good friend, Brilliant Miller. Good morning, Brilliant. I'm super happy, or good afternoon. I guess we just officially entered into afternoon here, didn't we?
We did.
So happy and excited to have you here and to collaborate with you on this live stream podcast today. I'm going to come back around and do an official intro for you. Before we do that, I just want to get a few quick housekeeping items out of the way. First of all, I want to remind everybody that is joining us today that we will be following up our conversation with an open Q&A forum. And so we encourage you, in whatever platform you are joining us from, to go ahead and type any questions or comments that you might have into the platform there. We'll try to keep an eye on those throughout the hour and get to those questions. If they're relevant, during the conversation or at the end of the conversation, we'll come around to those questions. So feel free to bring those questions up. Let's see. I am Earl Foote. I am founder, CEO of Nexus IT Consultants. We are a white glove outsourced IT support, cybersecurity, and cloud firm based here in Northern Utah and serving Northern Utah and beyond, a 22-year-old IT firm. And I've been doing this segment of live stream podcasts on entrepreneurship, on leadership, and on tech topics, and inviting some of my friends to join me. And the reality is, everybody that has been on the show, including Brilliant, are really great, abundance-minded entrepreneurs who want to give back to the community. And so we've joined forces for these segments so that we can try to provide some insight, some thought leadership to the community, and potentially help some other leaders and entrepreneurs potentially grow, potentially solve problems in their businesses, and ultimately grow their businesses and their ventures. So I do want to get down to business, and I want to introduce my esteemed guest for today, Mr. Brilliant Miller. Brilliant and I have been friends for a number of years, and I'm super grateful for our association and our friendship. This is a person who consistently stretches my perspective and my mindset, who consistently helps me think about life and business and the circumstances we face from more constructive perspectives. And so Brilliant is a writer, a teacher, a podcaster, an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, and a personal leadership coach. He is founder of the School for Good Living, a B Corp that provides personal coaching and coach training programs to help achievers and seekers define, design, and live extraordinary lives of happiness, meaning, and contribution. Brilliant serves as a member of the board of directors, as an executive director of culture for his family business, the Larry H. Miller Group of Companies. Brilliant is committed to the possibility of a world that works for everyone. So, Brilliant, thank you for being here and welcome with me this morning.
Thank you, Earl, and thank you for those kind words. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. So maybe let's talk a little bit first off. I know you've designed this, you've designed the School for Good Living and this program to really help people find more purpose in life, to define a life of purpose, and to be able to achieve that life of purpose. But I know that for you, there was a journey. I happen to know the backstory, right? I know that you had your own struggles in life with figuring out who you are and what you wanted to be and what you felt like your purpose was in life. And so, and I realized that mentorship and coaching played a significant role in that for you. So maybe we can preface the conversation here by you telling a little bit about your backstory and how you came to this realization that this is where you want to be and this is what gives you purpose in life.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I want to start by acknowledging that I'm extraordinarily blessed. I recognize that having watched my parents and participated in our family business from the time I was old enough to start working in the companies at 16, you know, I realize that I have so much to be grateful for. And my dad, it's a little hard for me to believe, but it's 12 years ago this month that he's been gone. He died at just 64 years old due to complications from diabetes and a long list of health ailments that really, in my view, were largely avoidable or at least highly treatable. And I think so much of that was a result of him prioritizing his work above virtually everything else in his life for many, many years. And he achieved and he accomplished and he gave so much to so many, but he often put himself last, didn't take good care of himself in terms of going to sleep, you know, getting a lot of sleep. He'd go to bed not too late, after 10 o'clock probably, but he'd wake up super early without an alarm clock, maybe in the 4 or 5 o'clock hour to be sure. He wouldn't eat breakfast. He'd skip that, you know, in the name of productivity and getting to the office. He didn't often have a healthy lunch, drink soda, didn't get a lot of exercise. Although earlier in his life, he was a world-class fast pitch softball player, didn't go to the doctor, you know, had a lot of stress. So in a lot of ways, as I said, prioritized his work above, not only his health, but also for many years, I think his family. And, I think his work was in many cases, his social, you know, relationships and things like that. But one of the things that I realized watching how he lived and died was that I want to emulate so much of what I see as the, you know, desirable and laudable aspects of him, the generosity, the wisdom, the work ethic. But how can I do that without suffering some of the consequences, some of the downside? How can I live to see my grandkids and maybe even my great grandkids have a high quality of life, you know, that kind of thing. And that really has informed, you know, not only how I've chosen to live, but the work I do in the world by helping people who have gifts, which we all do, you know, and maybe they have a message, they have work that they feel called to, or maybe they don't know what it is yet. And how can we find that? And how can we live it? And how can we experience the happiness and the meaning that comes from that? So that's a bit of my backstory there.
Very, very good. I know your dad made so many amazing contributions to the world and to our local community, and obviously was, you know, one of the entrepreneurs that the community has always looked up to. You know, the name Larry Miller, you know, is a pillar, you know, in the Utah community. And those same struggles, I think, are struggles that most of us entrepreneurs and leaders deal with. How do you find, you know, balance, and how do you allocate adequate amounts of, you know, time and energy towards all of your pursuits and all of your purposes in life, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I know as you were, you know, a younger guy in your 20s and 30s trying to find yourself, you know, and really kind of having this journey of working through the family business, and trying to figure out your purpose. You have a story of a rabbi, right? That, that became a mentor in your life and kind of helped you, figure out, what path you wanted to set out on and where you really felt like you defined your purpose. Maybe do you mind sharing that with us a little bit?
Yeah, I would be happy to. So this was just over a decade ago now, and I was in a situation where I had graduated from the University of Utah. I love to learn. I love language. I love reading and writing. I love Asian studies. I was an Asian studies major and an English major. And although I had worked in the family business starting at age 16, just doing a variety of things, you know, washing cars, selling cars. Later, I worked at our theaters. At this point in my life, I had been working at a place my dad built in Tooele in Utah's West Desert. It was called Miller Motorsports Park. And it was something that he had created as basically a little playground to enjoy his historic Shelby Cobras and GT40s with friends, family, you know, and ultimately with the community, he wanted to build something that was what is known as like a club track. And, you know, it'd take a few million dollars to build something like that. It was a little dream he'd had for a lot of years. And eventually an opportunity came up to acquire some land, to lease some land in Tooele. And what started out as like a $8 or $10 million project ultimately became $100 million racetrack with a world-class clubhouse and team garages and a go-kart track and off-roading, all this. And I had, as I said, graduated from the U with my 2 degrees, and I didn't want to leave the family business because I felt like that would be leaving the family. I think anybody watching this who's part of a family business has maybe felt the same thing. It's so much of an identity, and it keeps you connected for better or worse, right? And I didn't want to leave the family business. And what would I go do with a degree? Either maybe enroll in law school or work at Barnes & Noble, which I had done, or serve tables, you know, which I also had done. And I didn't really see a future for myself outside the family business. I didn't want to leave the family business. So when my dad started this project, I accepted an assignment. It was, I use the term sometimes, nomineered. I was voluntold that I would go work there. He could see that I wasn't really landing anywhere that was fulfilling for me and asked if I'd go be a part of it. So I did. That was back in 2005. And from that time, you know, with no business plan, that course, that racetrack grew. And it was a place that was really special, full of passion and full of just a spirit of generosity and fun and adventure and this kind of thing. But it wasn't my passion. Although I can appreciate nice cars, you know, I'm not a gearhead, a huge motorsports fan, this kind of thing. And a lot of days I'd find myself out there just wondering, what am I doing here? Like, whose dream am I living? Why am I here? And ultimately, I know that we're all faced with these same questions of who am I? What do I want? Why am I here? And it was during this period that a lot of things just felt really challenging in my life. That was shortly thereafter, just a few years later, my dad died. He'd been sick prior to that, had a heart attack, was hospitalized. I'd had a son who was born prematurely, spent 9 months in the neonatal intensive care unit. I ended up separating from my wife, and we ultimately divorced. And then I had this crisis, really probably a midlife crisis, although for me, it came a little earlier in my life. And I didn't know what where to turn. I didn't know exactly what to do. But before my dad had died, he had received a letter of request from a rabbi here in Salt Lake City. You know, I think it's interesting that Mormon missionaries, there's usually about 70,000 around the world in countries all over the globe. Whereas this rabbi, his rabbi, had sent him here to Salt Lake from Milan 30 plus years ago. So he came here to serve and teach. And I knew his name only because he had asked my dad for some financial assistance to carry on his work, primarily with youth who are in crisis. And I didn't know anything about that except, hey, this guy sounds like somebody who might know something that I haven't heard before. His name is Rabbi Zippel. So I called him. I told him I was having a hard time in life. I wondered if he'd be willing to sit down and provide me his perspective. He welcomed me in. In our first conversation, without really knowing a lot about each other, as he just said, you know, what's going on? And I told him all of this. And I just said, you know, it feels like my life isn't working. And he invited me to do this little exercise. It goes like this. He said, at the time I was named Brian. I legally changed my name in 2020. But he said, Brian, I want you to do this. I want you to close your eyes. And he said, I want you to picture the 7 billion people on earth just going about their business, doing whatever they're doing. They're going to school, they're at work, they're relaxing after, you know, coming home from work, whatever. Times Square is busy. What's going on in Tokyo or Rio? You know, like all these things are happening. Can you see it in your mind's eye? I was like, yeah, I can picture that. And he said, now I want you to imagine you're the one person that's missing. Everything else is happening exactly as it always does. All these people are going on with their lives, and you're the one variable that's different. You're gone. Can you feel the difference that makes? And I said, nope, not a bit. Like, it doesn't matter one iota whether I'm here or I'm not. And he said, that's your problem. He's like, all this stuff that you're telling me about why your life's not working, all these problems that you're facing. He said, if you found and live your purpose, these things will just resolve themselves. You know, and he went on to explain to me that every one of us has a purpose and it's unique to us. And we must find it and live it. And just as no one else can live our purpose, we can't live anyone else's. And so it really is up to us. Now, I'd heard things like that before on Instagram posts or Hallmark cards. Like, it's, yeah, that sounds nice, but how do you find it? And he did not tell me what it was. And he didn't even tell me how to find it. But just that idea that I do, in fact, have a unique purpose to which I'm called, and that I do have the opportunity to find it and live it, that one idea was transformational. And I think of it a bit like a fiery arrow, right? That it went in me and it lit something. And part of what that taught me, by the way, is that there is the content of what we say, and then there's the energy or the intention that goes along with it. And I'm not sure exactly if it was the content in that moment of my searching and my struggling, or there was some quality to his words, you know, that was just right for me right then. But I do know that it really did change my life, and that I'll always be grateful for that insight that the rabbi gave me. And now, Earl, you and I met, as you know, before I had a beard. And now in some ways, I think I look like I look like a rabbi. But really, I'm just having fun.
Yeah.
Seeing what I can grow.
Hey, you know, 'cause the time of COVID, right?
That's right. And everything is always undergoing change. Right.
Absolutely. It looks fantastic, by the way.
Well, thank great. You.
I've seen it since the time it was stubble. And it's come quite a ways. You've long surpassed mine.
Well, you inspired me.
Nice job. So, this experience with the rabbi was quite a pivotal experience for you in your life. I mean, it set you on a pathway. Maybe it wasn't in that exact moment, of course, but it set you on a pathway where you began to reflect and think about this, you know, what is my life purpose, right? And I want to come back around to finding or defining purpose, but before we go there, that whole journey has led you to create a school, a program, a coaching mechanism, and the ability to be able to train coaches called the School for Good Living. So tell us a little bit about that evolution from I'm lost, I don't know where I'm at, which, by the way, is very refreshing and fascinating and real to hear, you know, somebody, particularly, you know, from a very prominent family in our community that, you know, many of us have our own preconceptions about how life might be for prominent families, right? And it's real and refreshing to understand and know that we all kind of go through the same challenges and journeys in life. But anyways, so you go from this, I'm kind of lost, I don't know where I'm at, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know why I'm here, feeling potentially a little bit worthless, to figuring out your own purpose, and then, you know, using that to create a model to help other people kind of do the same thing. So tell us a little bit about that journey, and tell us more about what the School of Good Living is, if you don't mind.
Yeah, thank you, Earl. Well, I do think it's true that we teach what we need to learn. And I've also heard it said that we are our own worst students. So that is perhaps true. What I know is that in life, we all get lost sometimes, and we all get stuck, because life is a process of serial evolutions, or at least it's an opportunity for them, right? And we tend to have this idea that we're born, we learn to walk and talk and navigate the world and relate to people. And then we go through adolescence and, you know, we graduate high school, maybe college, we get married, we take a job, we have a mortgage. And that our evolution as like our growth, because our physical growth stops more or less around, you know, 18 to 25-ish. Our
body maybe not around the waist.
Yeah, maybe not around the waist, right? We continue to change in some ways, but the way we perceive ourselves as growing physically stops. And in some ways, I think we take that to mean that we stop growing emotionally, psychologically, mentally, spiritually. And I don't think that's the case. We do. And by the way, against that backdrop of our own personal journeys, there's all these life situations, right? Getting married, you know, maybe having kids, the kids leaving, then there's a spouse lives or dies, career changes, you know, like there's all this change that's occurring meanwhile, while we're also changing. So to see that in some fundamental way, we're all on the same journey of birth to death, hopefully from ignorance to wisdom, some measure of wisdom, at least to knowledge, learning about ourselves and the world and other people, you know, this kind of thing. And what I knew was that, as I said already, my life wasn't working for me. In fact, I talk about this sometimes. I don't want to talk about it a lot right now, but I made the decision to end my life. And when I was a teenager, I actually had suicide attempts. And I know that it's easy to look at people with wealth and to think that life must be easy. And I also don't talk about this a lot publicly because it's like, oh, cry me a river. Like wealthy people, oh, those are, you know, what kind of problems could you really have? Or, you know, I've heard people say, and in some ways I think this is true, that if you have a problem money can solve, you don't have a problem, right? But I also know that with wealth, there's other challenges. And I think of a friend of mine named Lynn Twist. She wrote a book called The Soul of Money. And she tells a story from her life in this book about when she was a young woman, she went to India. She actually wanted to work with Mother Teresa and the Sisters of Mercy in the slums of Calcutta, serving firsthand people who were, you know, destitute or not fortunate. And Mother Teresa, you know, she waited. She went to Calcutta. Mother Teresa had an audience with her, asked her, "Why are you here?" And she said, "I came to serve with you." And Mother Teresa listened to her talk about her background and her motivations and actually said, "I want you to go home to the United States, where people have their own form of poverty, but it's a spiritual poverty." And didn't give her, again, a lot of instruction there, but it set Lynn on a course of working with people who do have money and helping them, whether it's their loneliness or it's their purposelessness or it's their addiction or it's some of these other kinds of things that often aren't as visible, you know, because again, they occur at the level of thought or perhaps even the level of spirit. And I've certainly experienced that in my own life, this poverty of spirit, perhaps. And I do think that as humans, we are ultimately yearning to connect with something bigger than ourselves, whether we know it or not. It's this fundamental urge to really have a sense of connection, have a sense of meaning, ultimately to grow. And I had felt that, but I wasn't getting those needs met in the places I was looking. Or the ones that I did, they would inevitably come to an end, like school. It's a great opportunity to learn. It's a great opportunity to meet people. But then you graduate, and then you go on to what's next. And then the particular forms that presented themselves for me, jobs in the family business, for me, they didn't ever check all those boxes or scratch that itch. And as I mentioned, when I had thoughts of ending my own life when faced with adversity, and life is hard for all of us. Some of the same reasons, some of them are unique. A lot of them we create ourselves, others we don't. They're, you know, kind of imposed on us by external factors. But one of the things that I said was, look, I'm either going to find a way to live a life that I love and a life that matters, or I'm not going to be here. But then what I knew was that that wasn't just going to happen. No one was going to come and hand me a business plan and a roadmap and some funding and set my schedule for me every day and put me on that path. So I realized that I needed some kind of a vehicle to do that. And I thought, well, a business is something that I think is at the intersection of a lot of these things. It's a chance to serve. It's a chance to connect. It's a chance to learn and grow, right? And so I thought, well, I will start a business. And I actually did start one inside our family business first. And it was dedicated to preserving my dad's memory, because at this point, he'd been gone about 5 years. And I knew there were a lot of stories left to tell. And if they didn't get written down and shared, they get lost. So with the support of my family over the period of about 2 years, I collected those from more than 100 people, from childhood friends to NBA Hall of Famers, you know, this kind of thing. And I reconnected with my passion of language and reading and writing and people. And then that evolved to become the School for Good Living, where I knew, look, there's a lot of things that I've learned from my parents and from other teachers that I've been privileged to have that I do think people are looking for. Principles related to mindfulness, principles related to emotional awareness and mastery, principles to just discovering what we want and then charting a course to get there. And from that, having learned this myself, I said, I want to put this in some kind of a framework that people can understand, people can enjoy, people can benefit from. And that was what the initial, you know, the genesis of the School for Good Living was. So that's the 3 minute version.
Might've been longer than 3 minutes. No, I'm totally joking with you, but, so very fascinating, you know, from I'm kind of lost. I don't know my purpose. I'm actually considering taking my own life to beginning to figure out and define some purpose for yourself in life to learning so much in that process that you feel like, you know what, maybe this is my purpose is to impart the knowledge that I've learned and to help other people define or find their own purposes and live lives that they enjoy, that they loved experiences and be able to achieve the things that they want to achieve in life. I've personally been through the curriculum for the School of Good Living, found it to be fascinating, found it to be, you know, to stretch my mindset, my knowledge. My wife is doing the program right now. I'm actually talking with my kids about doing the program because I feel like it could be significantly valuable for each of them in their own lives. You know, thank you, first of all, for just, you know, for going on this journey of finding yourself and for that leading to creating, you know, an amazing program and content and coaching system, you know, that helps other people, you know, produce some of the experiences and results that they want to have in their life. Maybe discussing purpose a little bit. I know that oftentimes when people hear about, and I realize that this topic of finding or defining purpose is super common when you start engaging with a coaching program or mentorship. And it's something I had, you know, been involved in significantly prior to, you know, meeting you and being involved in the School for Good Living. I think oftentimes there's a common misconception. Do you feel like people generally have a predefined purpose, or is purpose something that you figure out and define in life?
Yeah. Excuse me. Well, what I come to believe, Earl, is that I don't know. I don't know. But I do know from my experience that declaring a purpose for ourselves and then living congruent to it or doing our best to live congruent to it, that alone can transform our lives, right? That we might think, I don't know if I have one. It's kind of like God going, I don't know if God exists. I don't even know how to know if God exists, right? If purpose is the same thing. I don't know if purpose exists in the universe just waiting for me to recognize it and then live true to it. I don't know that. It could be the case. But I, as I said already, I do know that we have the power in every moment to declare a purpose for ourselves. And that's really no different than, hey, there's a purpose for this meeting. There's a purpose for this project. There's a purpose for this business. There's a purpose for my life. And it doesn't shock any of us that we can declare a purpose for our company or our team, right? Or even our marriage. That's not a revelatory thing. But for some reason, it seems shocking to people where they just dismiss the idea that I could declare a purpose for my life, right? So I do think that. Then on the other side of that, I do also think there's something about, look, if you can say it or you can think it, it's not true. Whatever it is that you could say or think, it's not true. Now, that's a little bit of a metaphysical thought or even a mystical thought. But the point in that is that our experience, as far as I can tell, our experience is true. But when we attempt to share our experience or describe our experience, all we're doing is we're putting words to that. It's not the experience itself. So it's not the truth of our experience, but it doesn't mean there's not value in trying. Anybody who's been moved by a beautiful film or a piece of poetry or even a painting or something that represents experience knows there can be tremendous value in the expression, right? In the attempt. But I think all of that is, I think it's useful as meta as that might be. I think the great usefulness in there is saying, look, I have declared and I'm living a purpose of my own creation, not because it's true with a capital T, but because I am the creator of my own experience, or I can be. Right. So it's like a teacher of mine once said about a firm intention held loosely. right? That I could change it anytime I want, but I'm also aware that I'm the one that chose it in the first place. And I think that that shift, the kinds of things that you know, people have made that kind of shift when they stop using words like I should, or I've got to, right? Because they understand that there's a whole level of choice and freedom and commitment and responsibility, like all these things go together. So that was a bit of a take on that idea, but I do think that purpose is something that's available to us in every moment.
Yeah, very, very good. I really enjoy the answer. And it's interesting that oftentimes the answer is there is no one right answer, right? It is what you decide to define it to be for yourself. And I can attest, first of all, that having, you know, defining a purpose for yourself in life, produces a great amount of extra concentration and just an overall better experience. I don't know that there are specific purposes that each one of us are supposed to live or not live. What I know is that if you decide that you have a purpose and that you're going to dedicate yourself to that purpose, you generally end up creating a lot of really great stuff, right? And I would just, you know, for those that are joining, I mean, my recommendation would be make sure your purpose isn't entirely self-serving. Make sure it's not shallow. And I see people who I know have purpose in life, who have defined a purpose and who are living that purpose, because you see the amount of conviction, you see the amount of dedication to who they are and what they're doing. And if it were me, I would say, look at what you're passionate about. Look at what ways that you can make a meaningful impact in the world, and figure out if your purpose revolves around that. And if it means that you are creating a positive ripples, you know, in the world, it's probably all the better, right? If you're somehow positively influencing lives of other people, and you can do that in business. Like, you know, that's one thing that's an epiphany I had to come to, because at one time I felt a little lost myself. I was like, what am I doing? You know? And when you understand that as a leader, you can actually have a very positive impact in the lives of the people around you. You know, besides the fact that you're providing an opportunity, you're providing employment, you're providing benefits, you're providing, you know, good compensation, you're providing opportunities for personal and professional growth and whatever it may be. But by living a life of purpose, you can help others potentially see life from a more constructive mindset, and also figure out a purpose, you know, that they want to dedicate themselves to. So I wanted to talk a little bit about
Earl, just real quick, yeah, if I may jump in before Absolutely. We get away from this. Yeah. I want to build on what you said there about having a purpose for yourself, and that I want to make the point that having a purpose, there's two things on what you said. One is having a purpose then gives us the opportunity to be congruent with something, right? And I'm fond of saying that our lives are already about something. Everyone's life is already about something, many things probably, but for many people, they're not aware. It wasn't intentional. So is it about getting by, looking good, winning, you know, this kind of thing, avoiding failure, this kind of thing? Or is there a higher aspiration for your life? And a purpose can set that, and then it gives you a chance to be congruent with it. But without the purpose being set, there's not that same chance. So that's one point, for what it's worth, right? And in the effort of that, by the way, is then the opportunity to learn more about yourself, right? Because so much of life, as far as I can tell, it's not about the specific accomplishment or the acquisition, but it's about what we become in the process of pursuing it. And so that purpose, then the goals and the activities that you choose, if they revolve around it, like literally everything in your life, if it revolves around or is congruent with your purpose, what an amazing, like, galvanizing power that provides. So that was the first thing. The second thing is then the opportunity that it provides to invite people in, right? And there's maybe no more powerful or recognizable example of this than Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. Right? If his purpose is equality, then with having declared this and moving towards it, he has the opportunity then to invite people to share that purpose with him. And I would submit to you that that's what leadership is. Leadership is an act of invitation. you're inviting people to share in your purpose or your effort. And without having declared it first, what are you left with? Like the fascination of the day, right? The topic that sounds interesting or good in that moment. So anyway, I wanted to point that out because I thought what you were saying was really right on.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Great, really great insights. Our friend, Dr. Jeb Hurley, actually has asked a really good question here that I think is a great segue into this topic of what is coaching. And so Dr. Jeb Hurley says, brilliant. Can you also talk about how you help people find purpose? What's the journey you take them on?
Yeah. So we'll start with what is coaching. I like to start this by talking about what coaching is not, right? Because coaching is something that is a relatively recent development. I mean, the last few decades for sure, where if you look back at the history of, I'll say the last 120 plus years, where psychotherapy and psychiatry became a thing, right? That grew out of medical science, still, of course, part of medicine and science, but it stopped being in the realm of philosophy and it started being more something you could study, even to the point now of where we're looking at neuroscience and neurobiology and physiology and stuff like that. But I would distinguish coaching very much from therapy, where my view, now I'm not a therapist, I've worked with therapists and I'm very grateful. I think it can be incredibly beneficial. But coaching is very different from therapy, where in many cases, therapy is working on figuring out what's wrong and restoring it to function. So moving from dysfunction to function. That's one way of thinking of therapy. Whereas coaching, by contrast, moves someone from functional to optimal. So it's not looking back and trying to unearth or explain why are you the way you are? And maybe what could you do? What are the mental techniques like cognitive behavioral therapy, or how can you, you know, become more aware and stop those patterns? Now there's value in all of that, but coaching is not that. Coaching is also not consulting, where consulting is someone comes in, they diagnose a problem, they give you a solution, they charge you and they leave. Oh, they give you a plan or a set of recommendations and they leave. Again, there's a time and a place for a consultant. It can be very, very helpful, but coaching and consulting are different modalities. And these are not exclusive, by the way. There are a lot of therapists who are also great coaches, and there's a lot of consultants who are great coaches. The last one here that I would say what coaching is not mentorship. Now, again, mentors, fantastic. Anybody who's been privileged to have a mentor probably knows there's tremendous value in that. But why coaching and mentorship are not the same is that a mentor typically is someone who is older than you, or at least further along a path that you want to follow. So somebody who's made a bunch of money in finance, or somebody who's, you know, got a real estate portfolio, and they're basically telling you how to do it. They're instructing you. This is what I did, and here's what I would do if I were you. Where coaching, by contrast, believes that you already have all of your answers inside you, right? That's and coaching, by the way, there's not a single definition that's universally accepted, no surprise. But the closest perhaps that exists is a definition by the ICF, which is the International Coaching Federation. It's the closest there is to like a global governing body for coaches. But what the ICF defines coaching as is partnering with clients in a thought-provoking and creative process that inspires them to maximize their personal and professional potential. It's a little wordy, but I think pretty good. And what I love about that is that it's partnering, right? It's collaborative. It's not the coach saying, here's what you should do and how you should do it. Instead, it's client-led. So you're letting the client set the topic or what's the outcome you're trying to achieve. You're trusting in their own wisdom. In some ways, it's almost the Socratic method of helping ask questions where they then lead themselves to their own answers. Right. Coaching is also future-focused and it's creative. It's not so much about looking back and understanding why do I do this or why am I the way I am, but instead, what is the result that I want? Who do I have to be to get there? What are the patterns and the beliefs and the behaviors that I must then live? What are the commitments, right? And so in that way, it's always or almost always future focused and creative. So that's how I would describe it. Beyond that, if I just spoke maybe a little bit poetically, I think coaching is a really beautiful modality whereby we can become aware of things that we weren't previously aware of. We all have a blind spot, right? There's always stuff that we can't see in ourselves the way someone outside of us can see it. So I think it's just a really beautiful way to understand ourselves, life, and others in a way that we couldn't otherwise.
Yeah.
Or at least that I don't think we could otherwise. I haven't found anything that's quite like it.
Yeah.
And it's non-judgmental, by the way.
Right. I've found it to be massively useful in my own life. I mean, oftentimes we get stuck, you know, in life. You might get stuck on a business problem. You might get stuck on a life problem. It might be a relationship problem, right? And sometimes the answer is so simple and easy, but you just can't see it, right? And having a non-biased third party dig in and ask questions and challenge your reality and, you know, challenge you to expand your way of thinking and finally helping, you know, you find answers, you know, has been massively important to me and in achieving what I want to achieve, the person I want to be, the life I want to create and experience, and, you know, in creating the success I want in business. And so, and I don't mean to, you know, make the whole topic here about purpose, but I do think that Dr. Jeb's question here about, you know, maybe a little bit about the journey of how a coach helps people find or define purpose. Maybe help us understand that a little bit.
Yeah. So the thing about purpose is that, as I've mentioned already, it's, I believe, at some real level, that it's a choice. That it's something that you declare, you speak it into existence, right? Or you write it. And I think we know that writing and speaking has power, but I don't think we always appreciate the power that it has, the power to create, right? That a corporation, you can think of a corporation a lot of ways, as its assets, as its employees, as its, you know, its headquarters and this kind of thing. And those are all valid ways to think of one, but another way to think of a corporation is that it's a set of organizing documents, right? That were, it was incorporated. And same with things like our marriage. A marriage was spoken into existence, right? There was a minister or some other kind of official. There was a ceremony. And then he asked, you know, do you take this person to be your spouse? And da-da-da. And there was a yes. And there was a yes. And it was through language that that was created, right? Same with college graduations. I mean, a lot of things. The same with countries being, it was spoken. It was agreement that created that. And so purpose is the same way, is that we can speak it into existence. Then, so you go past that. And for me, that's pretty mind-blowing about our power to create just through the act of speaking. But you go beyond that and you then say, well, how do I find it? Well, I think there's a couple ways. One is you could start at that high level, like I just said, and you could sit down with a pen and a journal and you could write, what is my purpose, or my purpose is? And you could declare it. You could be an interrogative or a declaratory statement. So that's one way. And that works for some people. It's kind of abstract. You know, like I collect life purpose discovery processes. There's a lot of coaches and teachers who've come up with their own or whatever. You know, like one of my favorites was to just write about your purpose until you come across something that makes you cry. I'm like, okay, I haven't done that to the point that it made me cry and I accepted it as my purpose. But that's one thing you could do. Others, there's some that are more like a Mad Libs, like fill this out. You know, there's things like Ikigai. That's what does the world need? What do you enjoy doing? What are you good at? What will people pay for? And it's right in the bullseye of that. There's all these. And they're all valid. I mean, I don't think there's a one size that fits all for everybody going, hey, fill this out and you'll have your life purpose. But as we've already discussed, it could be that simple that you declare it and boom, that's it. Right? What's left? To live it with conviction and faith and so forth. So that's one way. You could start at that high level and just speak it into existence and live it. Other ways are like you touched on earlier, which is, what are you passionate about? What feels like it's calling to you? What makes you lose a sense of time, right? What are you striving to master? Like, is it music? You know, is it another art form? Is it cooking? Is it communication or teaching, right? So there's all these different things that can point us to it. And those are still at a level of abstraction because it's not yet saying, oh, it's teaching this topic to these people. And you could say your purpose was that, you know, my purpose is to teach Spanish to refugees from, you know, Haiti. Like, you could pick that as your purpose. You could declare it if you wanted. But what I like to say is that all of these are useful potentially, and to try them out, right? And to live it as long as it seems like it's a path worth following.
That actually brings up another topic. But for me, I think just one other maybe suggestion there is that I think that generally your purpose is going to be very fulfilling to you. It's probably going to provide a sense of meaning and fulfillment beyond any other experiences that you have in life. And so, my personal purposes, you know, and I have certain, you know, different purposes defined in myself as an entrepreneur, myself as a husband, myself as a father. And they generally revolve around service. They generally revolve around making a positive impact in the lives of those around me in the world. And those things are fulfilling and meaningful to me, right? You mentioned something that I think is maybe important to note. And I think oftentimes people decide that, at 21 years old, I've defined my purpose and that's my purpose until I die. But the reality is life purpose can change. Circumstances in life change, where you live may change, you know, your career may change, your family dynamics may change, and those things may all influence the purpose that you define in that moment and how you decide to live your life and create meaning. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think so. And I also think this is where it could be useful to distinguish a little further too about saying, look, you can have a purpose, you can have a mission, you can have goals, right? And if you think of these, do they nest? Do they fit together? Because if your purpose is something about healing and the environment or animals, you know, it's something. And who knows, there's no wrong way to write one. There's no right way. But if it resonates with you. But then, so you might have this high level kind of thing. And then you might create a mission that's, you know, to end, if your purpose is about animals, and then you might take a mission that's to, you know, ensure that no animals are euthanized. Like every available animal that could be adopted in my state, like that's my mission. And you might work on that for a year or a decade. But again, you could have multiple missions simultaneously. You could abandon one and pick up another one at another time. But the thing about a purpose is it becomes like a focusing agent, saying, are these missions congruent with that? Are the goals that support the mission congruent with the purpose, right? So it's almost like a check and balance kind of thing. So I think what you're saying is right on.
Very good. So I want to discuss maybe a little bit about the benefits of coaching having a coach or a mentor. And I realize, you know, we've already defined mentorship and coaching are two very different modalities, right? But, and I know over recent years, you've formed a personal relationship with Sadhguru. He's become a personal friend to you and obviously somebody that much of the planet looks up to as, you know, a very enlightened philosopher, you know, somebody who helps people kind of navigate this odd thing we call life. So tell us a little bit about maybe his impact on you and then the benefits that you've found from having coaches in your own life or that you produce through the School for Good Living for your clients and students.
Yeah, so Sadhguru is someone who, I'm not sure if he entered my life or I entered his, we're in the same life, but I learned about him unexpectedly a few years ago when my wife and I, on a date night, went to Barnes & Noble and we both treated ourselves to a brand new book at full price in a brick and mortar bookstore. And she picked his book, Inner Engineering. Neither one of us had ever heard of him at that point. She read it and said, I think we ought to learn more from this person. We enrolled in a course and went to, at the time, he was teaching a program in San Diego. We went and had no idea how special it was to be one of about 200 people that was in this program. And it was a Kriya Yoga initiation. And at that time I'd been meditating every day for a few years, but this added for me a dimension to my practice, learning some preparatory asanas, some yoga postures, some insights from him and so forth. And that was, I think that was either 2017 or 2018. And since that time, I have not missed a meditative session, morning or night, do 21 minutes. And I don't think there's a one size fits all for everyone, but what I learned from Sadhguru, just, it's been so beneficial to me. And it doesn't matter what time zone I'm in, if I'm sick, if I feel motivated to do it, like I just don't miss. And that's brought me so much peace and I think clarity beyond what I probably would have without it. And since then as well, my wife and I have had the good fortune to travel in India with Sadhguru. We've hiked in the Himalayas in Nepal and Tibet with Sadhguru, visited some sacred sites of pilgrimage at Kailash and Lake Manasarovar. And we've also had the chance to ride motorcycles with him here in the United States and visit his ashram in Tennessee. So really remarkable person. That what I love about Sadhguru and the difference that he's made for me is that he's shown me that spirituality isn't something separate, or it doesn't have to be separate from the rest of our lives. Instead, it's really concerned with well-being, with our own well-being, with the well-being of those around us, those that we can touch. And many of his programs, you know, that he, many of the things he engages in are humanitarian in nature, not just teaching principles of meditation and yoga, but planting trees and helping clean up polluted rivers, right? And coming up with ways of helping business people be more effective at what they do and more responsible for those they lead and those that they sell to and serve. And to see that he's now in his 60s and he is strong and vital. I mean, he was hiking those mountains in the Himalayas at like as well as I was. And I thought about, by contrast, my dad, who we talked about at the beginning, there is no way he could have done that. And Sadhguru is about the age he did when he died. So to see that he does it all with a vitality and a vigor and a passion and an aliveness, it's just, is one of those things that it really inspires me what's possible, you know, for me and for humanity.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Well, what an amazing privilege to have the opportunity to be, you know, influenced by somebody of his stature and I would say probably enlightenment. So I just want to remind the crowd, you know, we're starting to wind down to the top of the hour here. We will try to get some more questions. So if you have additional questions, you know, throw those in your chat on the platform you're joining us from. But tell us then a little bit more about what some of the benefits are of coaching that maybe you've experienced in your own life or the people that have engaged with you and your programs have experienced.
Yeah, so many. And thanks for asking. And you and I have talked about some of them already, right? Things like becoming aware of things of which we weren't previously aware, whether those are limiting beliefs that we have, you know, ways that we can never be or that we must be, you know, things from the way we were raised or society, how society has conditioned us, you know, this kind of thing. So being able to see those, because someone who is what we might call a loving critic, our coach who loves us but who challenges us, can call that out in the way we speak, in the words we say, you know, just by asking a simple question like, how true is that? Who would you be without that thought, right? What would be possible for you if you believe something else instead? You know, this kind of thing. So that sense of insight and awareness is a huge potential benefit of coaching. Another that I don't think can be underestimated is the accountability, right? We will do a lot for a lot of other people, but I think sometimes we don't do as much for ourselves, or it can be easier to break our word to ourselves and to have a coach who, again, will challenge us by asking us to make a commitment to ourselves. You know, what will you do and when? And would you be okay if I followed up? Again, it's permission-based. So they're asking, they're not dictating to us. But, you know, that having that external accountability partner can be huge. Then another benefit of coaching that I found is the energy, like the inspiration and the energy. You know, in life, you look at your calendar, look at the 168 hours you have to live. Set aside the ones when you sleep and look at the ones when you're awake. So now you've got, what, 100 plus hours, hopefully, give or take. And within that, your activities, they either drain you, they energize you, or maybe they're neutral, but for the most part, they're either depleting you or they're adding to you. What I found is coaching, and this is true for me, whether I'm the coach or I'm being coached, is that it's additive to me. I leave that coaching session and I feel motivated. I feel inspired. And that is huge, because so much of what we get to do, it is responsibility focused. And we do, I think, get to serve, but we also, I think it's important to replenish ourselves. And coaching is a way to replenish yourself. So that's a huge benefit. And then also the relationships that you build. If your coach is one who it's great to do one-on-one coaching, group coaching is also often a wonderful thing. And the benefit you get from meeting other people in a program and hearing their insights and learning about their experience, that can be another way of just accelerating your growth, right? Because we get to live this one life at a time. But when we get to hear what other people have learned and what other people have experienced, what a great way to accelerate our own growth.
Yeah.
100%. Those are a few of the benefits.
Yeah. So I know you and I have had a, you know, we've got an outline of some topics, and we're not going to get to all of them. Maybe maybe we end up doing a version two of this, because I know there's a lot more you know, content and conversation that is very valuable here. But as we kind of wind down here, our friend Priscilla Blanchot asks a really interesting question. She says, as a dad, how do you differentiate between coaching and parenting, and what is the difference? Yeah.
That's a great question. That's a really great question. Well, again, as I touched on just a few minutes ago, a principle of coaching that I live by, I endeavor to live by, and I teach the coaches I train to live by, which is to ask for permission. Ask for permission before, right? So it can be, do you mind if I challenge you here? Or would it be okay if I asked you a question? Or would you be willing to make a commitment? This kind of thing. With parenting, I don't do that so much. Now, when kids get to be adolescents, that starts to change, because I think they have enough life experience, enough judgment to start making decisions on their own. And obviously at some point they're going to be, but when it comes to something that deals with my kids' health, happiness, or well-being, if my opinion differs from theirs, I'm not asking them for permission. If it's bedtime, hey, I know you're going to function with less tantrums tomorrow. If you go to bed now, then I'm not asking you if you want to go to bed now, I will tell you. Right. And so I think there's something here that's bigger about boundaries, and it's about rules of how we want to live and how we're willing to let others, basically how we're willing to let others treat us. And having that clearly established for your household is really not a lot different than having that established for your life. So that's the way I look at the difference between parenting and coaching.
Yeah. Fascinating. And I, by the way, have experienced, both approaches to coaching in the past, you know, coaches who are very forceful, coaches who decide that, you know, they understand the correct path for you, and they're just going to tell it to you, and they're going to be forceful about, you know, about it. And I've had experiences with coaches who take the approach that you've mentioned, which is, you know, this is all discretion of the person, you know, of the coachee, right? Mm-hmm. And you're there to be a guide. You're there to, you know, to ask their permission or to help them challenge, you know, reality or view other perspectives. But it's, you know, it's very much a process of guiding and not forcing somebody to live some reality that you seem to perceive, right? But to define their own reality and to then, you know, take the right steps forward to create that reality. So this has been a lot of fun. It's been very fascinating to sit down and have this conversation with you. I hope that it's been, and I think it has been, we've got a ton of comments here that I haven't even gone through, but you know, tons and tons of comments across the platforms. And I think a lot of people have taken a lot from this. I want to thank you, Brilliant, for your time. I want to thank you for your life, for you, you know, deciding that you would find a purpose, and for that purpose being to, you know, to really make a positive impact in the lives of other people. And I feel blessed to be a person that has come into contact with you and that has, you know, received of your knowledge and your wisdom, and of your friendship. And so thank you for all of that. Just want to remind everybody, you know, follow Brilliant and myself. We're both, you know, engaged in social media. You can look us up on LinkedIn. We both have Facebook pages. Do you have Instagram? Do you do Instagram?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
I'm terrible at Instagram, honestly, but a little too new age for this old school guy, but I have an Instagram as well.
Who would you be without that thought, Earl?
Good question for sure. Anyways, you know, follow us. Brilliant is somebody who his content and his approach to life and topics is just, you know, always refreshing, and I always find amazing value in the thought leadership that you create, in the content that you create. And so I encourage everybody to follow you. If you have more questions about coaching, if you have more questions about the School for Good Living, about that program, again, massively helpful in figuring out how to live a more constructive, more meaningful life that you're happy with, that you, you know, enjoy the experience with. Reach out to Brilliant. Do you want to give everybody some contact info?
Sure. So I think the best way to get a hold of me is with my email, which is brilliant@goodliving.com. So that's pretty easy. People can also visit goodliving.com and learn about what I do. There's a contact form there as well. There's a phone number on the website if you wanted to call, but email's probably the surest way to get in touch.
Perfect. Again, thank you so much, Brilliant, for the time today, for a very constructive, fun conversation. Thank you for everybody that's attended over the hour. And we're at the top of the hour, so we're going to go ahead and sign off. We wish everybody a wonderful week.
Yeah. Thank you, Earl. And thanks, everybody. It's good being with you. Take care.